Now, children, I know you're all disappointed today that you didn't get the funnies. So gather around. Here's Dick Tracy. Let's see what Dick Tracy is doing.
That's the most famous moment of New York Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia's long and colorful political career. It's from 1945, during a newspaper strike, when LaGuardia went on WNYC to read the funny papers out loud to his constituents, or at least to read those ultimate mid-century strips, Little Orphan Annie and Dick Tracy.
And the picture shows a hand of Breathless. She's got hold of that iron pot. Remember the iron pot she took from the Van Hoosens? And crash! She crashes it on his head. Knocked out.
The mayor set up different readers for the comic parade, as he called it, for each day the strike lasted. Over 3 weeks. Back then, the comics mattered that much. Almost an essential public utility. Comic strips have lost some of that gigantically broad appeal over the last few decades. But at the same time, among a certain set of readers and comic artists, they've become even more compelling and certainly more ambitious. More than ever before, comics today are considered a rich and deep art form. From Robert Crumb's Zap Comics to Gary Trudeau's Doonesbury to Chris Ware's Jimmy Corrigan, the smartest kid on earth, to Art Spiegelman's Mouse. My guest today is Art Spiegelman. Art won the Pulitzer Prize for his graphic novels about his father's survival of Auschwitz and his own relationship to his father, called Mouse and Mouse 2. He's a staff writer and artist for The New Yorker magazine, for which he's created numberless wonderful cartoons and covers, including the black-on-black image of the World Trade Center towers that appeared 6 days after the attacks. Art has two books out right now. One is an anthology called Little Lit, Strange Stories for Strange Kids, and the other is a tribute to a legendary 1940s and 50s artist. It's called Jack Cole and Plastic Man, Forms Stretched to Their Limits. Art Spiegelman, thanks for letting Studio 360 invade your headquarters here at Raw Books.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
So, little boy Art Spiegelman, how did you become so entranced by and obsessed by this form of comics?
Huh. Well, it probably started because I was terrible at baseball. Having only one eye made me a permanent resident in the outer right field, where balls, if they came by, would just hit me in the head because I didn't have parallax vision. On the other hand, comics seemed very real because one eye is enough to see a comic book panel is real. So, since, at least when I was growing up, to not play baseball was sort of to get relegated to a category lower than girl, I made up for it by learning how to draw my favorite comics characters.
You've written about your family from early on, which obviously continued with Mouse. What made you think that important and profound stories like those could be told in this form?
Well, all I really knew when I started working on Mouse was that I wanted to make a comic book that needed a bookmark that you'd have to go back to. And there wasn't enough precedent for that to really know the right way to do it. So that there are a number of false stops and starts and trying to find the right tone, both visually in terms of what drawing style I would use and what degree of focus, let's say, to tell the stories or the connected story in. And maybe that's part of why it ended up taking so long. The two Mouse books were 13 years of work.
They were published serially, though, at the beginning?
They were published. Francoise and I had a magazine that we started called Raw that was published. It was a sporadical. Basically.
This is your wife, Francoise Mouly.
And we started this kind of Lower Manhattan comics magazine that was rather large format, like Life magazine size, using a lot of people who were aspiring painters as well as comics artists, renegade illustrators, some people who were still kind of hanging on from the underground comics moment that was passing but weren't finding an obvious place to publish because it wasn't stuff about sex and drugs necessarily. And the result was we were doing this magazine. It was about the same time that I started working on Mouse as a book, and the magazine's premises were all wrong for the book I was working on. It was large size, very graphic, and I was trying to do something small scale and intimate. But when we started the magazine, we didn't know it would be an ongoing project. We just wanted to do one issue to show what comics could do and be, since nobody was doing that. And as it went on, I realized I'd have to insert Mouse into Raw as a little supplementary booklet in order to keep both projects happening at once.
Now, Mouse really became this enormous mainstream cultural artifact. Can you account for that?
Well, Mouse became some kind of crossover hit. And I suppose part of it is probably the subject matter. In some way, Mouse became Holocaust 101.
Holocaust for Dummies, I was going to say.
A kind of painless way to understand one's history. And I never intended for anybody but me to learn anything. It was more like, what story is worth all of the labor that doing a comic requires? And telling a cheap gag or escapist adventure story wouldn't justify the amount of time I have to put in to make a page. So that's part of it. And I think another part of it is just that it involved spinning the kind of work I'd been doing immediately prior to working on Mouse in reverse. What I mean by that is, in the earlier 70s, I was doing a kind of comic that now I guess would be called structural or semiotically based or something like that.
Tell me what that means.
Well, I was just interested in how far one could move away from narrative and how many ways one could break up a narrative and still make it read, and what the visual specific elements of a comic and comic page were. And when I was moving further and further in that direction, I realized eventually I wouldn't have to do comics for publication at all. I just should find some gallery wall to put them on, because these were no longer what people were looking for when they were looking for comics, and that a central part of the definition has to be making narratives, making stories people want to read. So in taking on something like Mouse, it meant using all of those things I'd figured out about the way a comics page actually lives and breathes and works, but spinning it in reverse to make it as seamless as possible so that people could read it relatively effortlessly or transparently, even though for me the formal elements of Mouse are still the things I see when I look at a page. But for most readers, it just goes down without you noticing that it's going down. So after a while, as a reader, presumably from what I've heard, you don't even remember that they're cats and mice, except when some very specific attention is made of it. And ultimately, one just is getting the pleasures of what comics can offer, which is a story that kind of unpacks in your head.